Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
You're listening to Primetime on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Singaporeans will go to the polls on July 10th in an election that will see the contest for hearts and minds waged on a drastically different battleground due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The widely anticipated announcement of the election date came earlier this week when President Halima Yacob dissolved Singapore's 13th parliament and issued the writ of election. And a lot's happened since that announcement was made. We've seen a number of developments. And to help us make sense of the latest news and what's come out with regard to Singapore's upcoming general election, we're joined on the line by Deputy Director of Research at the Institute of Policy Studies, Dr. Gillian Koh. Gillian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me, Rachel.
So the first question I want to ask you, you know, let's set the scene here. We're in the midst of a pandemic. We've seen a record of 4 budgets to help support the economy. Starting from there, what are some of the key issues that you think will be in focus this election?
Well, as you said, this election's being held on the back of the twin crisis that stems from COVID. First, of course, the healthcare one, which had the knock-on effect on the economy, not just of Singapore, but the rest of the world. There have been disruptions to supply chains, but also demand and, confidence all around the world has gone really down. So I think I'd make 3 key points about what's at stake in this election. First, clearly, emerging out of the COVID crisis stronger and safely. I think that it's clear that both the governing party is on top of this issue, but the opposition's also saying that they do not want Singaporeans to be left behind, especially those in the disadvantaged segments, the people in the low-wage, low-skill segments of the labour market. So the first point is really how can Singapore and Singaporeans bounce back in a way that sets us up not just for the immediate term, but long-term economic renewal, but more importantly, in a way that strengthens social cohesion. And as one minister in the national broadcast preceding the call of, to this election said that we would reinforce the culture of solidarity. So it's not just words, but really action and everybody pulling together to achieve this. Which team can actually be trusted to deliver this and to campaign in a way that brings people together than cause greater social fragmentation if not done properly. I think the second set of issues is this. The newcomer to the scene, Progress Singapore Party, announced at its kickoff when it was launched that it liked to focus its campaign around the issue of governance. And it's basically how Singapore is managed by the government and, of course, the PAP has been in government since 1959. There is a suggestion because the party is led by a former PAP stalwart, Dr. Tan Cheng Bock, the suggestion that standards have not been maintained through the years, and I suppose he will call upon his history with the founding Prime Minister Lee Kuan Yew and highlight areas that he feels the governing party will need to be checked on, will need to be held accountable for, and also will need to pay greater attention to in terms of maintaining the independence of certain state institutions. The third one is really, and this is something we always talk about every time a general election rolls around, but in this case, with the election being held on the back of a crisis and voters possibly, allowing that sort of instinct of a flight to safety, or as the whole world's talking about it, the flight to leadership kick in, then they may want to go for a safe pair of hands, the experienced team, and clearly the PAP that's been there with, as you mentioned, a very strong, aggressive response to the COVID crisis by way of budget, policies, and actually down to the ground local programs with the career centers in, Singaporean heartlands. So the opposition will have to think very carefully and consider if, that there might be a total wipeout if they are not strategic in placing the right candidates, crafting the right messages for the voter base that they want to appeal to. In a way, all elections are local only because, these candidates have to also appeal to the voters on the ground as much as to Singaporeans and have the national message sent out. So 3 points, emerging out of COVID, how do we do it? Which is the team that can deliver that? Second, governance, maintaining standards of governance. So you need an opposition to check and hold whichever is the governing party accountable for its performance. Third, what is going to be the future of a rather diverse and some argue fragmented opposition scene in Singapore today?
So, Gillian, maybe you can share with us, what were some of the key highlights from this week that really stood out for you?
The most important highlight is the announcement of two leaders of the Workers' Party and the PAP. First, the announcement that Goh Chok Tong is not going to be presenting himself as a candidate. Second, that Mr. Lau Tia Kiang, who'd been the Secretary General of the Workers' Party up to 2 years ago, would himself also be standing down. This completes the process of leadership transition, both successfully effected in the PAP and the WP.
We've spoken a lot about the pandemic, and obviously this also means that the stage for candidates to speak to voters is very, very different this year. You know, we have a largely virtual battleground. To that extent, you know, what are some of the challenges that we're going to see with this election?
It's not unanticipated that the conditions for the election would be quite different, especially as we understood. You were looking at a very long haul in terms of managing the COVID threat. But you know what? Since we're holding this many months since the start of the epidemic and pandemic, many more than before are now comfortable with online interactive media. Think that is the case, not just the voters, but you've seen the parties actually adopting virtual town hall meetings to talk about their party platforms and, of course, introduce their candidates. The newcomer PSP itself has said that it has many videos pre-recorded in order to get the word out. So online campaigning is going to be the main way in which to reach out to audiences. So the question is, first, are the parties prepared with the material? And second, if they're prepared, have they been building up the audiences, in which case they need to be able to push out information about when they will be online, or push out information where people can view their material that's pre-recorded. But you know what? Through this kind of campaigning, you can be as direct as a one-on-one engagement, you know, between politicians and people putting their comments and questions and getting them responded to on, let's just say, Facebook Live. You can actually bring the campaign straight into the comfort of people's living rooms. I mean, they can actually sit there and engage the politicians, their favorite ones or the ones they want to test out and see, what they're made of. And it can be very specific because voters can actually put out specific comments about issues and, you know, then those on the other side behind the camera will have to, or in front of the camera will have to respond to those specific comments. And finally, it's scalable. You know, there is no limit to how many people can be viewing you at the same time, as we've seen with the public broadcast that when the PM speaks. And when this is recorded, candidates and parties can have another bite of the cherry. People can watch this at their own time and at their own leisure. So I think that that's what's going to be quite different, and it'll be up to the creativity, ingenuity of the political parties, and also whether they have candidates and personality to make that engagement work for them. This includes the PAP, of course, which has been using this through the COVID period, this media to reach out to constituents as well.
Nomination day will take place next Tuesday. What are you looking out for in the days ahead?
It's very important to take a look at the opposition strategy in terms of whether they are able to collaborate and to be very strategic in their choice of who they place and where. What am I talking about? I'm talking about avoiding three-cornered fights, because the understanding is that usually if you have more than one opposition party, you're splitting the non-PAP vote. So I think that over the days since the writ was issued, you see a little bit of that coming together to discuss and negotiate, not by way of an all-party conference, which was the traditional thing to do over very many GEs of past, but bilateral agreements. So let me give you an example. We're told that Reform Party agreed to step aside from contesting in West Coast GRC in order to allow Progress Singapore Party's Tan Cheng Bock and his A-team to, contest there. Clearly, Dr. Tan's old stumping ground is in Ayer Rajah, so he'd like to have to be able to come back to this area and ride on what he hopes would be the political capital he built up very many years ago. How many three-cornered fights there will be? Who will be fielded where? What is the match?
Well, thank you so much for your insights, Gillian. That's been a very in-depth overview of what's taken place over the last few days, and also what to look out for going forward. Thanks for your time.
Good chatting, Rachel.
Thank you. We've been speaking to Dr. Gillian Koh, Deputy Director Research at the Institute of Policy Studies.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.